It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 645 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Writer Justin Koch is interviewed this week, and he talks about his upcoming book, SWAT Eldritch Blue, issue number 1. This is Justin's very first comic, and it's coming to Zoop.gg very soon. It's described this way. A squad of broken-down outcasts, weirdos, and wizards battle to enforce the Grand Bargain, the agreement in which the monsters of the world have agreed to hunting quotas in exchange for safety from wizards like Larry Slaughter, who are always ready to hand out the punishment for breaking that Grand Bargain, summary execution. We discuss how SWAT Eldritch Blue came to be, who the characters are in this series, and what we can expect from Justin in the months ahead. Don't miss this fun and enlightening conversation. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Justin has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Viewer discretion is advised.
What if Harry Potter was a busted-up 40-year-old detective counting the days to his pension? It's what we do in Shadows mixed with The Wire. Of course, I'm talking about SWAT Eldritch Blue issue number 1, and I'm talking with one of the creators, Justin Koch. How you doing, Justin?
Hi, Wayne. I'm doing great.
Great. Now, we're actually doing this a little ahead of the crowdfunding campaign. We're trying to get people to sign up. Now, if you go to zoop.gg/C as in cat/SWAT1. That's where I see that to be. And you can sign up to get notification as to when things are going to be going on and things like that. So that's a good thing to do. So, Justin, are you the writer or the artist or a combination of both? What's your role in this book?
I'm the writer. Rachel Disler is the artist, and DC Hopkins did the lettering. That's the creative crew right there.
Okay. What's been your work in comics? Is this your first comic or have you done comics before? I'm not conscious of what you've done before.
No, this is the first one that I've been trying to launch. I started writing comics pretty recently. And by recently, I mean the last few years. And so it's taken this long to get the first one off the ground, basically.
Cool. Well, you know, it got to start someplace.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. Like, are you a comics fan?
Yeah. I mean, I've been reading comics, the newspaper comic section, back in when I was a kid in the 80s, Sandman in the 90s, you know, Preacher, some other things. I mean, Alan Moore in general, you know, and then I'm a huge fan of the current indie comic scene. I pretty much bought everything at the comic store at this point. Wow. Feels like anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I read a lot of comics.
Very good. Well, good for you. Because that. When did you decide you wanted to write? Because see, I'm a big indie comics fan. I actually was an editor of an indie comics series or two, but I can't make the leap from somebody who can read scripts and say that's great to somebody who can say that's what should happen. Because when I do it, it's deadly dull. How did you decide to make that jump?
Well, I started writing when I was 5 or 6, so it's been a thing I've been doing my entire life. Pretty much. I switched to comics 2 years ago. And I did it because I always wanted to write comics. I mean, I've been thinking about it for years. I've written entire novels that were supposed to be comics, but I was too cheap to pay an artist and I was too lazy to learn how to draw. So I just wrote a novel instead. But I decided to go ahead and experiment with it. And it just, I mean, it was like a lightning bolt. It just clicked. It was really powerful experience, because I think it's just that it's so free, right? Everyone's completely comfortable with, if you can make it as ridiculous as possible, that's great. But it's also very structured. And so I think that kind of hit really well with me. I wish I'd been here the whole time, honestly.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes you have to do it when you're ready.
Yeah.
And it sounds like you were ready. So it happened when it was supposed to happen, sounds like. So that's good. Now, these kinds of things, indie books and stuff like that, always fascinate me, because I've been in the indie scene for a while and done my own stuff. So it's fascinating to me, you know, where did the idea come from?
Well, I mean, I think I was generally annoyed with J.K. Rowling because of the Twitter thing. And then somehow or another, I just started writing it, honestly. What you're seeing on those pages is the edited version, but it isn't that far off from the first draft at all. It just started pouring out, and it went from there. So sometimes I can tell you, I layered this idea on this idea on this idea, but this just sort of was just a lightning strike, which is usually the best stuff, honestly.
Well, I do have to say, you know, the sense of humor comes through. I got to see the video, and I'm going to run the video, part of the video, and before this, because it's a lot of funny stuff. You're kind of poking fun at cop shows and different varieties and stuff.
I poke fun at a lot of things, but yeah, there's definitely a lot of cop show in there. There's 80s B action movie stuff in there, I think, to some degree. There's references to 80s B-horror in there, not in issue one, but somewhere in the series. So it's just kind of like all the pop culture that's been in my head kind of pouring out into a weird mix, if that makes sense. There's a lot of Venture Brothers in there, that's been a hugely influential show for me. It plays with a lot of the classic tropes of Law and Order type shows, for sure.
Well, there's a funny thing about it's already run, so people will know about it. You talk about the SVU intro and have fun with that and stuff. So it's
not spoiler material. Feel free to, talk about that. But basically the plot is, a short setup is, when he was in high school, basically his Columbine was Voldemort showing up at his version of Hogwarts and his version of Voldemort doing a school shooting in which he killed his version of Voldemort, essentially. And that sort of ruined his life. And he ends up in St. Louis as a detective because he didn't have anywhere else to go. So he's been kind of running away from the consequences of that day for a long time.
Okay. Now, SWAT stands for something else in this book. Why don't you tell people what it stands for?
Secret Wizard Assault Team. It's the kind of the secret unit that handles all the supernatural stuff.
Now, there's an image on there, and it's got another description. It says, 7 cops, 6 donuts, no coincidence, it says.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Right away, you're in trouble, because there's no way 7 cops are going to split up 6 donuts. So that's... Yeah.
The whole cover is basically a Usual Suspects joke. So that's the tagline for the, it's a modified tagline for the Usual Suspects is where that came from. Me and Rachel were bouncing cover ideas around, and then that just popped into my head. So,
well, is that the SWAT team there on that cover?
Yep.
Okay. I don't want to spoil too much, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about who those 7 people are, because you've got a very tall person standing there.
Yeah, that would be Girk. He's the police sergeant in the, that screams at the cop. That basically, that's his initial role. There's Maybellina. She's on the far right. Yeah. with red hair. She thinks she's a fake psychic, but she actually is a real psychic in that she always knows what the wrong decision to make is. And that's based off this lady I knew who just had a unholy talent for making the worst possible decision in every situation and saying the worst possible thing. There's Tiny Tim, who's about 2 inches tall, and he's kind of their wet work guy. He breaks into buildings and does the Mission Impossible stuff. And he has a magic murder bag where he can reach in and grab things, whatever he needs. And then there's Lisa, who's just sort of there. She's the normie who got exiled to this unit as punishment. There's Larry, who is the main guy. And then there's Mimi, who is his longtime friend slash co-survivor from back in the day. And then I think I'm missing somebody. Oh, there's Hermes. He's 3,000 years old and he's senile, but he won't retire. So that's the clue, basically.
Well, there's a shadow. Is the shadow with multiple arms going out, is that for her? Or is because it's behind the world girl with the sunglasses on?
Well, that's foreshadowing for a character who shows up later in the series.
Foreshadowing, I get it. Okay.
Well, it's not a pun. I mean, it's just that's I guess that's literally what we were doing. I guess it is on the nose.
Now, they're standing in front of one of those boards you have to stand in front of when you get your picture taken.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. They're not being arrested, are they?
No, it's just a usual suspects thing.
Okay. All righty. Now, I got to ask, is the psychic girl, is she blind or is she just wearing sunglasses because she likes to wear sunglasses?
She's just wearing sunglasses.
Okay. All right. So you want to differentiate people besides the ginger hair and stuff like this. So they're in St. Louis, and let me read a little bit. It says, the description says, a squad of broken-down outcasts, weirdos, and wizards battle to enforce the grand bargain. The agreement in which the monsters of the world have agreed to hunting quotas in exchange for safety from wizards like Larry Slaughter, who are always ready to hand out the punishment for breaking the grand bargain. Summary execution. And so it was done there. With your help, we can tell this utterly unhinged story.
Yeah.
So lots of interesting things going on with monsters and stuff like that. And the grand bargain, is there like an overarching organization that they have the agreement with?
Yeah, there's a Guild of Monstrosity is what it's called. And it's basically kind of like an evil Optimus club that sort of runs things, but not very well.
evil optimists.
That's kind of where it is. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what it is. They're not the sharpest, but, you know, so, but yeah, they basically get a certain number of hunting tags a year. And basically if you are using your tag, you can get away with whatever you want. If you are somehow trying to cheat, Larry will just blow you away. And so his job is to basically blow monsters away because they're constantly trying to cheat. So that's pretty much
That's what makes them monsters, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, which one is Larry again? Is he the blonde guy on the left?
No, the far left, that's Hermes. And
okay.
Larry is the guy kind of in the middle with
sticks. The long coat. Okay, I got you. And he's brown-haired with glasses.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. Okay, now I got to ask, of course, are these people, you kind of named people that I know already. Are these people based on people you know for some reason?
Well, no, that's not particularly. I mean, Maybellina is based off that lady I knew who made all the bad decisions. And I mean, I think all these characters have a lot to do with, every writer is just writing what's in their head. So I suppose, yeah, I mean, there are, must be based off of people I know, but not too specifically.
Well, because I know some of these people. the woman who makes every wrong decision. I worked with a woman like that.
Yeah, they're surprisingly common, actually. I know more than one. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a relatable group, right? And I mean, even Girk and Larry, who hate each other very, very much, they have their reasons. You know, neither one of them is completely off base for being irritated at the other one. So,
because, well, the boss guy who does all the yelling, I had a boss that used to do all the yelling. When he ran around the office, everybody put their head down because they didn't want him to yell at them. And he finally got called on the carpet because everybody just didn't want to deal with him so much that he actually mellowed out after a while. But, God, that's so funny. All these people sound so much like people that I know. So it's
I tried to, for as weird as it is, you know, the characters are very important to me. I feel like, you know, I'd rather have, I really want characters that you care about, right? And so I think each one of these, each one of the characters is someone that you could care about, and they care for each other. And so I think there's a probably more emotional depth to the series than you would expect from a horror comedy / law enforcement parody, you know?
Now I've got to ask, did you intentionally, as far as diversity goes, because you've got three women, two people of color. Was that intentional, or was that just how the story fell?
Well, I mean, I think that's just how the story went. I mean, I'm very for, if you're writing about St. Louis, you have to, if you're really showing St. Louis, it's going to be a diverse crowd. And that's just the reality of St. Louis, I think. Yeah, I mean, basically, Girk, the tall guy, he was originally based off of, oh God. There's an actor whose name I am blanking on. Give me a second. He was in Alien, I think. Let's see. It'll be here in a second.
Because I'm always interested in where characters came from.
Yaphet Kotto. He's based off of Yaphet Kotto because he was the sergeant in Homicide: Life on the Street. And then Lisa is just Lisa. I don't know. I don't really have an explanation for anything on that front.
Okay. It looks like a great cast of characters. And, of course, they've got crazy people to deal with, so that must be fun for them. If they've got seven cops, though, and six donuts, how's that going to end up?
Well, it's just the thing with them is, I mean, you know, it would have been pretty easy to write them as kind of jerks who hate each other, but they would figure out a way to share the six donuts. That's, you know, they fight about it. They'd be mean, you know, they joke around. They maybe fight about it a little bit, but ultimately they'd make sure everybody ate, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, you know, you get cops in a donut shop, that's not going to end well if you don't have enough donuts. So I guess that's the gag there for that. Now, the artist is Rachel Disler. And, of course, this being your first book, how did you and Rachel, you know, get together to make this book? Was she online?
Yeah, I saw Brent Fisher, who's kind of a guy I know in the comic community, was promoting her. She needed to. That she was looking for work. And when I saw what she had, her website's Red Tie Bear, redtiebear.com. I was just like, this is exactly what I need, right? Stylistically, it's the exact right mix of serious and comic to hit the right notes for the series, right? I nearly booked another artist, but I just kept having more and more doubts the closer it came to Painter. And then when I saw her, the other artist kind of got put it to the side, because it was just she was just the right one. So
it's interesting because in my experience too, we were working on a book, and the way that we sought an artist was we had one character in particular we wanted to see what artists would do, and we sent out the description, and we would get these. Drawings of what the character looked like, and most of them were kind of blah, and we finally got this one that made us sit up and pay attention, and that was the guy who ended up drawing the book, because he just did such a great job on that character and made the character pop off the page that we were just sure he could do it. And he did the first 12 issues, and it was just it worked out really well, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, when you know, it's really important when you're picking the artist that I feel like you should be kind of dazzled. It's kind of like buying a new house. If you're sort of like meh about it before you bought it, once you see all the warts, you're going to hate it. Right. Mm-hmm. So you want to get the right person in there to begin with. I mean, the first artist I ever hired was just the wrong choice, for the project and on every level. And so that was a waste of a year of my life, basically waiting for that guy to do 5 pages.
Yikes.
And then once I got him, I really didn't like them. And it was my fault because I hired an artist that I really, I don't know, I relied too much on recommendations, and I should have gone with my gut, I guess, more than I did. So I learned a lot from that one.
It's a process, though. You have to go through the process. And until you go through the process, you're not sure how this is going to work. And you're not only are you learning what you're looking for, but you're learning how to deal with people and stuff like that. And I don't know anybody who ever sent out and the first person they got was actually the one they wanted.
Yeah.
Because ours, like I said, they sent this image and we just looked at it and went, eh.
Yeah.
I mean, we could have grabbed that and said, okay, that's an artist. We got an artist. Let's go. But we didn't do that because the art just underwhelmed us so much that we said, we'll keep looking.
That's what you have to do. If it's not popping for you, it's time to move on.
Yeah.
It's important definitely to pick the right team.
So how far along are you? This is Eldritch Blue issue number 1. How many issues, how many have you scripted and how many has Rachel drawn? How far along are you with it?
I've written 36 issues. I've actually written 40, but that's counting the sequel. But 36 is the total length for the first. Well, I kind of view them as 2 graphic novels, but that's definitely the first arc, I guess. That's written. We have 6 or 7 pages done of the first issue. We're trying to raise, the reason we're doing the campaign is to raise money to start, doing these, on a faster pace. We're about probably a third of the way through the first issue in terms of being completely done, but it is all written. And it's really good. I'm very, very proud of what I did with this.
36 issues. Wow. Yeah. I have to say, that's impressive because I don't know many people who have 36 issues written.
it's one of those, I couldn't stop, right? I just kept going. I only do one project at a time because otherwise you end up doing nothing. Mm. 5 different projects instead of something to one. Mm-hmm. So I just sat there and I basically wrote it over the course of a year.
Wow. Wow, very good. Did anybody edit it for you, or how did that work?
I've done many passes with it. My wife has read quite a bit of it. I honestly have not had an editor look at it yet, but no one who's actually read the scripts has suggested I need one, basically. So
cool.
I don't know. I think this is one of those where that probably sounded incredibly douchey, but I don't know. In terms of the story structure and everything, I'm on fire. I mean, honestly, that's what it felt like. And it just works. Mm-hmm. Is what I think. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. I mean, see, my experience was different because my roommate was the one who was writing. And what he would do was he would give me a page and get my reaction to it. Mm-hmm. Like one time he wanted a page to be really funny. And I said to him, that's not all that funny. So yeah. I went back and rewrote it and stuff like that, made it much funnier, I thought. So,
I usually do 2 or 3 passes on the dialogue to tighten it up. You know, there's usually a funnier way of saying it than what the very first thing you thought of was. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying I don't need an editor, but I think for issue 1, we're definitely solid. You know what I mean?
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, the one thing I will say as an editor is that if you run into too many grammatical mistakes, it can be roadblocks to stop people from reading your stuff. I always like to say, you know, the old gag is,
Are you hinting?
No. Believe me, I have more people who want me to edit stuff for them than I could ever possibly do. So I'm not looking for work. Believe me.
That's not what I meant. I thought maybe you were telling me there's a lot of errors in the script or something.
No, I have to see the thing that it's. I always use the example. Let's eat grandpa. If you put a comma before grandpa and after eat, that means let's eat grandpa. If you don't have a comma, it's let's eat grandpa.
Yeah.
And I run into a lot of indie comics where the roadblocks just discourage me. I can't understand what's going on. So that's my big problem with that.
Yeah, I definitely, I take it very seriously. The dialogue in particular, I am very careful with, you know, and so it's been modified and edited several times, but it's usually by me. but I put a lot of effort into the dialogue. I think it really pops.
Good.
You know, and it might not be grammatically correct, but often that's usually on purpose.
Okay. Well, hey, if you understand it, that's great. Because honestly, I see so many books that I just look at and I hate to say it, but it's not only indie books, but there are other books when I'm sitting there looking at it going like, what are they trying to say here? I don't get it. So I'm glad that you understand it and you can communicate what it is you're trying to communicate. So that's a great thing, especially for an indie book.
Yeah, the first series I did, which I'm also producing, but we're not talking about here. I was still kind of learning the ropes in terms of panel design and stuff like that. So we have had to modify some of the original script from that, just because it's not feasible to do artistically. Usually by breaking things in that were one page into two, nothing too terrible, but. I put a lot of thought into the number of panels and the beats of the page and the timing of, you know, the timing between the panels, the timing between the open pages, and then the beat that you have a little bit longer beat when they actually have to turn the page. Mm-hmm. We'll see. But I think it's in pretty good shape. I'll just say that.
Oh, good. Good, because, you know, there are courses and stuff where people will teach you how to put together a comic book and stuff like that. And those things, I've never taken one because I can't get past the scripting business. But, hey, you know, if you understand that, because some people can look at it and it's just instinctive. It's like music. Some people can sit at a piano and suddenly all this music just starts flowing. And I'm going like, where did you get that? And it's like, well, it's just. It's in there, and it's just that's a talent that you have. So, you know, hey, that's your talent, you know, good for you. I'm glad you found it.
Yeah, I put in my time, you know, I've been writing and reading heavily for decades, right? It's just, I do feel like when I started writing comics, I felt like I finally found my thing, where I got the reaction from my writing that I'd always hoped for. I'm very excited about comics. I love doing them. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, well, let me ask a question. Why is it called Eldritch Blue Issue?
Well, it's Eldritch Blue. It's issue number one.
Okay.
I guess that might not be too clear on the website. Eldritch Blue is, I mean, it's kind of a play on NYPD, and it's also kind of the term for sort of, you know, how in Lovecraft everybody goes insane when they see a monster?
Right.
In this world, they call it the Eldritch Blues.
Gotcha.
Double meaning. It's a little bit of a spoiler, but that's fine.
Okay, because I didn't get that. So, all right.
You didn't get that part because it is a spoiler. But, that's the idea.
Well, I do have to say, I like the name Larry Slaughter.
Yeah, a little kind of slant rhyme.
Did you spend a lot of time on the names and the characters and stuff, or did they kind of come together, together really easy?
It was just a lightning strike. I mean, it all, everything that you read is, I just basically just wrote it in 20 minutes or less. I mean, it just hit. The characters definitely developed as I went, you know, but for the most part, no. I mean, and it was just, there was, you know, sometimes I do have a story about, you know, I read this book, I read that book, but this just sort of, it just happened. And that's cool. It's a lot of fun to write because of that. When the story is kind of takes, it gets out of your control and starts doing what it wants to do, that's usually when I feel like I'm at my best.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that doesn't happen to me. That's why you're the writer and I'm not. Just don't, it doesn't happen in my head. I the stuff I come up with is just boring, same old, seen it a million times stuff. But I can, if this is why I write reviews of books and stuff like that, and I can tell you what really worked. Oh boy, that was just the most wonderful thing when this and that and the other happened.
Yeah. But, well, you know, I think a big part of why I am able to do that is because my childhood was intensely boring. You know, like I spent a lot of time staring at walls, waiting for things to end, or spending 6 hours mowing the lawn. I had a lot of time to stare into space and daydream. So it was a natural talent that I had to really take advantage of to not lose my mind.
Well, let me ask you, of course, now that you're getting your first book going, what advice would you give to people, other indie creators? Because I always like to help other creators learn from people and what things. What did you learn now that you wish you knew before you started doing the book?
Well, I be very, very careful who you pick for your team. You know, you want three things. You want them to do great work and be on time and be kind of nice to work with. If you should at least have 2 out of 3, and ideally 3 out of 3. So, you know, shop around basically, you know, it's worth, finding somebody who really gets the script and who is going to be committed to it. It's well worth an extra 50 or 100 bucks a page if it comes to it. So there is nothing more infuriating than having to deal with a writer or an artist that's just flaking out on you and you can't do anything. Right. Mm.
Yeah. Cause, believe me, if they're not inspired or interested, the art's going to show it.
Yeah. Yeah. You just pick your team well. Don't just pick the first person that answers your message. You probably won't get ignored by, you know, some of the higher level people if you communicate with them. I mean, I got brushed off by several people, but that's fine, you know.
Well, you don't want them working on your stuff if they're not interested.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, you know, that's fine. I totally get it, right? They probably get hit up a dozen times a day with that kind of stuff, and most of it's probably terrible. But, you know, you will get rejected. That's okay. Just keep moving, you know. I think the comics community is really just interested in fun storytelling, you know, and there's a lot of wide open, there's a space for you somewhere probably.
How helpful was the internet to you? I mean, do you recommend people go there? Cause some people do and some people don't.
For what?
For like finding an artist or communicating with other creators and stuff.
I don't know how you'd ever find an artist without the internet at this point, unless you just knew them. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me. I live in Columbia, which is not a huge town, but I wouldn't just expect to find a comic artist that I would click with in the city. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you'd have to, honestly. I work with this guy on the other strip. His name's Leonardo Romanelli, and I mean, he's in Milan, you know, so there's no way I would have ever met him, and his art style is amazing, and it's perfect for what I'm doing on that project. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of social media myself, but it is pretty much have to have some kind of presence to get anything done.
Because I've known some people who have, because they're interested in comics, they go to a local shop and they meet other fans in the area. And they've actually met a writer who met an artist in his hometown that actually they got together and made a comic. And I said, how lucky you are, because, you know, like the book that I was working on, we were all over the globe. I live in Central Florida as well as my roommate. The artist lived on the top of a mountain in South Carolina. And the colorist was in the Philippines, and the letterer was, I think, in the Midwest and stuff. So they'd never all been in the same place at the same time. So it's a strange thing doing that.
I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible. It's just I would not expect to. It wouldn't be my first path. If it happened, awesome. You know, I'd totally roll with it if it did. But it would not be a. That's like a lottery ticket retirement plan. It could work, but probably not. Mm-hmm. You know.
So. Does having a spouse you can bounce things off help you?
Yeah. I mean, her enthusiasm and input was helpful. I mean, very much so. A lot of Larry and Mimi's relationship is sort of just the conversations we have over pizza and beer to some degree. So she's definitely a part of the script.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And it's also helpful to have a spouse who actually is supportive of a comics endeavor, because many times they have what I call a mixed marriage. There's somebody who's the guy is big comics, wants to make comics. The wife says, no way. That's tough.
I mean, my wife doesn't, I wouldn't say she's a comics fan. I mean, she'll do it occasionally, but she's happy I'm happy, I guess. And I mean, I think she also really thinks that this is a great comic. But yeah, no, she hasn't given me any trouble at all about it. She's just happy that I'm doing good work.
Well, that's great. Be grateful for that, because I know too many people who are not. Now, on the other hand, I met there's a married couple I know. Both of them are into pops. And their house now is like a pop museum. It's up and down the walls. There's all these pops everywhere. And they finally decided, I think we're going to have to stop buying pops.
And yeah. So, sometimes your opposites do work together. You know, you got to have somebody who's not just spending every dime, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, it sounds like it's working real well for you, and I'm glad. So how did you come to Zoop, by the way?
I don't remember exactly how I found them, but I found their website, and I really liked the fact that it was kind of a curated indie comic specific platform. Kickstarter is awesome and everything, but it's just, it seems like there's so many projects and so much going on that I thought I might be better off with more of a garden experience. So, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So you haven't done this before?
No, this is okay. The first campaign. This is not the first scripts I've ever written, but it's pretty early. Yeah.
Cause you haven't done the fulfillment yet. Which, let me tell you.
I'm sure it'll be a long day, but I can recruit some people, and I actually enjoy mailing things. I have this weird. I worked in a mailroom at an insurance company, and I was shockingly like Rain Man good at it. So I still have a love of mailing things. So I don't mind going to the post office.
Hmm. Well, what about, doesn't Zoop handle that for you though?
I'll check, but I mean, they have multiple tiers of service. Okay. I don't think I went for the top one on that one.
Okay. Cause you know, Zoop probably has several of those. They're in the process right now of having people buy a piece of Zoop, they call it. And so people can support them and do that, which I talked with Jordan about for an episode. And I have to say, I like what they do. I mean, I enjoy Kickstarter, and I have supported many Kickstarters, but there was a book I supported like 3 or 4 years ago, and the book finally showed up a couple weeks ago. I was like, yike. I said, yeah, I kind of remember this book. I think I did want to support this book.
At that point, just embezzle the rest of the money. That's just...
Yeah, oh, believe me, I know people who have taken the money and run. And
I really want to produce this series, so nobody needs to worry about that. I will get it done as fast as humanly possible and get it to you.
Are you going to divide it up into chapters? How are you going to do this?
Well, each issue is essentially its own chapter. It's pretty much what it amounts to.
And each issue is how many pages again?
Typically 21.
Okay. That's pretty standard for a comic. That's pretty
good. I go up to 22 when I 23 if I absolutely have to. Probably just 22. You can usually tighten it up to get to 22 if you need to. A lot of the time I feel like I'm actually, you know, I kind of developed a habit of having like 2-page bumpers at the start of the each issue. Because the main script was coming to 19 pages every time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, let's take this opportunity to do some foreshadowing and have a fun joke at the start of every issue. Mm-hmm.
Because I'm going to get into the weeds of publishing here. You got to do sets of 4 in order for it to be published correctly. So it's got to divide into 4. 24 pages usually you'll have 22 pages, but you'll have other stuff around it, like ads and junk like that.
Yeah, I mean, you got to leave some space for the credits and things like that. So,
yeah.
21 should be a solid choice, I think.
So it sounds like you got it all pretty well nicely figured out. That's good, because a lot of people get into this. I have to tell you a really funny story. I was at a convention down in Miami, and there was a gentleman sitting there, and he used to draw his own comics on paper, and he would Xerox them. They were hand-drawn black and white on paper, and he was sitting there trying to sell them and stuff. And I looked at it and I said, no. I don't think so. I don't think that's what I want out of a comic.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't want to exclude anybody. I mean, I have to admit that kind of like outsider thing wouldn't probably get my money either. But I do like, I think Rachel's a really great artist. I think she's definitely professional grade in every way. And that's where I kind of want to be. For the whole package, it's pretty polished.
So about how often do you figure you'll put an issue out?
Like I said, I wrote all of it. So as far as I'm concerned, as fast as Rachel can pump them out. I don't want to sound like I want the project to be over, but I want it to be done and out so that people can read it. It depends on how well things go. You know, if we can afford, if the sales are enough to support her going, focusing entirely on that, probably pretty fast.
Are you going to do a collected edition when you get them all done?
I absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that would definitely be the plan. I have hopes that it will be published by, I haven't heard anything back yet, but it is out with major publishers. And I think somebody will take it. So it'll end up, being formally published somewhere.
Oh, good. Well, I hope you get that, because it's nice to talk to somebody who has thought all this stuff through, because so many people, there was a Kickstarter for one time where a guy says, I had this great idea for a comic. You give me the money and I'll put the comic together. And everybody said, you should have the comic together before you go and try and get our money. And
you should have something going. I mean, that would be a pretty thin one. But, it's a learning process. It's creativity. I've run my own business for quite a, 15, 14 years now. So a lot of this stuff is, once you kind of learn how to solve problems in that context, there's a lot of stuff that can transition to other businesses, basically. So I think that helped quite a bit if I'd been like a 19-year-old fresh off the hang-up truck.
Yeah. Well, it sure sounds like it. I'm glad that you have all this stuff figured out. I think that bodes well for success. Once again, it's called SWAT Eldritch Blue issue number 1. If you go to Zoop and you go for coming projects, but if you want to go directly there, you can go zoop.gg/C as in cat/SWAT1, SWAT1. And sometime this summer, as what I understand, this is going to get going. So just sign up there. You can sign up and get notified as soon as the campaign launches. And Justin, I wish you much success. I hope that this really takes off and lots of fun. I could see this being an animated cartoon or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, I that would be amazing. That would be beyond my wildest dreams. But at this point, I just want to get it out. I'm very, very proud of it. I think it's without a doubt the greatest thing I've ever written. So, yeah. Thank you for having me. And do sign up, guys. Please.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. And that's it for this week. Be back next time. We'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.